Hi there, and welcome to The Conscious Communicator, a show dedicated to helping you find your true voice, the nonviolent voice of personal responsibility and purpose, the voice that only you can speak. The reason that most of us fail to achieve our true voice is because of the false voices that occupy the mind. The voices of ego, consumption, expectation, opinion, and self-doubt rob us of our true nature, our true voice. Join me as we have a chat about inner purpose, outer passion, and finding your true voice.
Hey everybody, welcome back to The Conscious Communicator. This is Rusty, and as always, you can join us by calling toll-free at any time, 888-228-4494 in the U.S. or Canada, or toll-free worldwide, 877-489-6350. Our topic tonight is forgiveness. And we're going to talk a little bit about forgiveness with our guest, Jimmy Robinson. I'm going to play a track for you in the background as we get started. Hopefully you can kind of hear some of this as we get started. Jimmy's an internationally renowned, basically a lyricist and a poet. I've had the good fortune of getting a chance to listen to his music and some of the different stuff he's been doing this week, as well as read the books that he's created, which are visually absolutely beautiful. Jimmy, thank you very much for being with us tonight.
You're welcome.
I really appreciate it. One of the things that I find really amazing about your poetry, I think more than anything else, is the feeling of the moving on. And tonight's topic is talking about forgiveness, and I kind of want to get into a little bit. I know I've read some of your bio, as much information as I could get, and it mentioned that in the past there were some challenges that you faced, and I would imagine that getting past those challenges was a big part of what your passion and your creativity is all about today. Can you speak to some of that stuff?
Yeah, you want me to tell you a little bit about what I've been through?
Yeah, absolutely. I think our listeners would appreciate that.
Well, you know, the 90s, like 91 through 2002 were really, really rough for me. I, was homeless most of the time or in jail, and it was created by drugs. You know, I couldn't seem to stop partying, it was tough because I kept going deeper and deeper and deeper in a hole, and it lasted for a little over a decade. But I cleaned it all up in 2002 and started my life.
One of the things that because I work a lot in recovery, we work with a lot of guys coming out of prison who are trying to get started over again, and one of the things that we have to deal with them is trying to come to grips with some of the challenges they faced that kind of got them started on the path. Did you have any sense that there was a part of that for you, that there was some stuff that maybe had happened to you earlier in life was some of the reasons that the drugs, or was it just something that kind of jumped up and grabbed you?
I had been partying since I was on and off since I was 18, and I don't know. I didn't think there was anything wrong with it, you know? I don't know what started me, right? But I started, and it seemed like it was never going to end. And just one day, I just ended it, and I never looked back. And that day that I ended it, it seemed like everything that I ever dreamt of was starting to come true. But nothing that I ever dreamt of came true when I partied. You know, I mean, I wrote a lot. You know, I wrote. Well, actually, you know, I wrote, but it never, I mean, I didn't do anything with it. You know, I just read my own writings. So when they were not worth anything, you know. I mean, I can't just help myself. But my first book, Pieces of Jimmy, uh-huh. You know, it was kind of amazing, I thought. And I said, well, what could I do with it? You know, nobody would publish it. So I actually printed it, and, well, I printed a bunch of versions. The first couple were horrible, but then I teamed up with Atlas Books in Ohio.
Right.
And a great designer. The designer of the cover was Spike Fleming and a girl from Connecticut, Sandra Taylor, and she... that my first book was created, and then I called the Recording Academy, and with much you know, it took a while, but they actually accepted it and put it in the Grammy gift bag.
Yeah,
and
I was reading that about that. They've really been given away quite a bit from different people. You've been able to give those gifts away. The Imagination is Free was the one that really jumped out at me. The books the ones that you sent me. But the poem that do you call them poems? Would that be correct?
Yeah, I call them the poems. Do I call them poems?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. You know what? I mean, I don't think I write like, you know, Edgar Allan Poe. I think that I just write what I can feel them coming out. Yeah, it's poetry, you know, lyrical, contemporary, kind of, you know, yeah, poetry, definitely. Jimmy poet.
The one I really liked was called I Deserve It. And if you
Oh, my God. Oh. No, you know what? It's one of my favorites. It tells my whole life story. Yes, read it.
Yeah, that's the one that jumped out at me. I Deserve It. Love, music, peace. Ancient tears, drops gone, lost roads I traveled, not to say the walls that shattered my dreams, endless was yesterday, been to prison, been homeless too, told me I would never make it, the laugh's on you, just be yourself, move on, don't let the people make you stop your dreams, do all the things you want to do, follow your life, make the stars shine, heaven is divine, the earth is too, answer to no one, move on, make all your dreams come true. I've been reading that to all my, I work in elementary school, actually up through 8th grade, and I do some stuff for 7th and 8th grade middle schools. I've been reading that to all my kids. I've been reading it to them this week, and I just, that one really popped for me, and that one I think was kind of autobiographical if I read it right.
Yeah, you got it. Boy, you picked the right one because, you know, when I write them very fast, and usually I can feel them coming out.
Right.
By, you know, either what's around me or where I put myself. And I write so many, but that particular one is definitely after I wrote it, I said, oh my God, boy, God must be telling me exactly who I am and what will happen if I do it.
Right.
Because that was one of my favorite ones. I Deserve It as well, you know, and I try to read that too, and I donated books to the Stella Academy and spoke to the kids. It's a school in East Los Angeles.
Right.
It was really nice because I told them what I had been through, and they read, you know, a bunch of my books, and, you know, I guess, you know, it was very exciting to talk to kids, middle school kids, and hopefully, you know, it could help. I don't know how many it helped, but I would hope all, but, you know, if it helped a couple, it would be wonderful, you know.
Well, that's one of the things that we try to get the kids to do is really to start to think about some outlet. And my show is called The Conscious Communicator, and one of the things we talk about are concrete skills that people can use in their daily lives to help them to really to come to grips with, you know, some of the challenges or some of the things that they do. Do you have a sense of some concrete skills that you might be able to share with me that I could share with some more young people about beginning the process? So kids are they're so self-conscious about writing, even if you're not going to read it. Most of the kids feel like, you know, that you're going to check their spelling or anything else. We try and give them journals just to get them started. Do you have any sense of how we can help them get started?
Well, you know, write what you feel, and, you know, you don't have to be able to spell or put periods or commas, because I don't use any of that. I just write the words that I think, and I read them afterward, and it's like therapy, you know. But don't think that you have to write like anybody that you've read, because that's not what writing is all about. You know, it's your soul, and I think if you read what you write, I think when you write, it's who you really are.
Right.
And if you read what you write, you're going to be able to help yourself.
It sounds kind of like your path. It really sounds like through the through the art you were able to really help heal yourself as part of this whole process.
No, seriously, I was, and I couldn't thank God or whoever. I mean, yeah, it's got to be God and my mom for, and my grandmother, because they were, you know, very creative. They obviously gave it to me through their genes, but the writing is very special, because when I read some of it, I almost can't believe I wrote it, because it helped me change so much, and the message is, could be for anybody. I mean, you know, when you know, everybody can't write, but I think everybody can, in a way, because I, going back to Stella Academy, when I donated the books,
mm-hmm.
The children wrote me a whole book and gave it to me, presented it to me after I spoke to them.
Right.
And it was amazing. There was hundreds of poems that they wrote me from my poetry, and it just blew me away. So, you know, it's very, very, anybody can change.
Do you have any sense? One of the problems that I notice with these kids, and when we start the classes each time I go in there, I'll go in there tomorrow morning, for example. We start off with music a lot of times, and I put your CD in this week and let them listen. And so there's music going, and we basically give them a journal, and we say, just write whatever thoughts pop into your head. A lot of them, I mean, honestly, I don't think that they think they have thoughts popping into their head. Literally, I think they're sitting there going, yeah, I don't have any thoughts. When did this start for you, this ability to write your conscious flow of thought? Do you have a sense of that?
Yeah, you know, I think it's in all of us. You know, you feel it kind of coming, and you just take advantage of it. Is that what you're asking, or?
Well, literally, I know that all of us have those. I mean, it's like
you look at their
faces, but children oftentimes can't really, especially at that puberty age when we're really trying to reach them. Because for a lot of kids, that's the jumping off points for drugs, alcohol, sexual, you know, impropriety,
right,
and so forth. And so we're trying to get them
to touch them. Okay. Let me re-answer that then. I think if you put positive things in front of children, they're going to remember it, just like they remember the negative.
Right.
And I think the more positive that you put in front of them in the schools, the more that they'll hold that, and they'll know the difference between the negative and positive. You know, the good things, you know, that you teach children in schools. I mean, look, we all are put through different circumstances when we're young. But in schools, I think that the more you put in front of them that can bring it out, no matter what, I mean, it can be bringing them outside, you know, and just looking at all the different nature, you know, that could bring something out to make them write, or a funny show, or, you know, just talking to them. I think maybe talking to them could help bring it out, but mine didn't come out till later in life. I didn't do that. You know, I could feel it when I was young, the feelings, but I never took advantage of it until I got older.
When did you start writing?
I wrote when I was younger, but then I stopped, and then I started again when I was maybe 30.
Oh, okay.
And I would keep the, but I did write when I was young. My grandmother, showed me how to write poetry when I was young.
Uh-huh.
Like, she would tell me to write, and I would actually write, and it would come out, you know, like a poem, or, so I must have always had it in me, but I never did anything with it till I got older. But I think all the bad things that I did from, you know, after graduating from high school till 2002, when I basically started my life,
right,
it all came out in the writings, you know, and every poem was for change, You know, like if you read the Jimmy, did you get the Jimmy Land book?
Yeah, I think I have all of them. He sent me like 5 or 6 different books.
The Jimmy Land book is the one with my face on the cover with these cells through it. Like, that's the old stuff that I wrote. Some of them are new, some of them are old.
No, I think he only sent me your newest stuff.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'll send you all the books. I apologize. I thought we had sent you like 9 or 10 of them.
No, he sent me the newest. I think it's just the newest ones. I've got Peace, Love, and Music, Time Warp, and Mind Juice. Those are the 4 that I got.
Mind Juice is an older book that I wrote.
Right.
Actually, maybe 2002.
I think
my best stuff is starting to come out now, like in Rock the World, you know, stuff, because it's very, like, some of the older stuff is more searching for who I am. Some of the newer stuff is more, if you just try, you can do it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, when I read your stuff, and that's what really jumps out at me, it's like a positive affirmation workshop. You know, it's, you know, the world is available. It's available for you. You can do it. I mean, and so much of that, like I said, it's so positive, and I try and get it into the schools when we can. But, I, you know, listening to you, and I'm starting to get the sense, too, working with some of these kids at the same time, some of it does seem to kind of sink in, but unfortunately, it's kind of like the whole idea of education in general. We may be trying to educate these kids at the wrong time of their brain development, because a lot of the kids just simply aren't able to receive a lot of that information until they get to a point where they've either had life experiences which encourage them in that direction, or their brain gets a little bit more, you know, more open to suggestion in that regard. Because, I mean, yeah, your books just read like... I like the kids to start every day with one of these poems, you know, because they are so positive,
yeah.
At least the stuff I got.
Yeah, and, you know, I didn't know that the middle school kids, because some of them were pretty deep, I thought, but it was the opposite. They liked it because it made them think. And that
right.
Stella Academy taught me that, and I donated to some other schools in Los Angeles, and I would get letters, and, you know, it was really nice, you know, because I didn't know that young of a group would really be able to connect with it, and they are, you know. So kids are very smart today because, you know, they have the computers and they have so much in front of them, negative and positive, you know. And I think that if they see both sides, hopefully the positive will always win, you know. Or even if it doesn't.
Was that kind of a high end school though? Were these kids pretty? Advanced, because
no,
the kids I'm working with are mostly in like the
no Stella
the
Academy. You know,
kicked out.
No, I think Stella. Well, maybe. I mean, Stella Academy, I think, is for I think it was all Latin kids. You know, like, but I think it was kids going through all kinds of things. You know, it was very nice. You know, to hear their. What they thought and that they understood and they read. Yeah, I don't know. I just have to put it in front of them and see if they like it, right? I mean, if you give them a different book, there's so many different ones.
Just trying to inspire them, find some way to do it. So, yeah, I understand you're in Florida. We had talked about that. Are you traveling around? What are you up to these days?
Well, I travel a lot to Brazil. I donate a lot of the images in my new books. I don't know if you have Time Warp, right?
Mind you, yeah, I have Time Warp.
Okay, so Time Warp, the front cover is from a poster that I put in, like, did for Aretha Franklin and for the Grammys last year.
Right.
And then the back of the cover is images from Brazil, like
okay.
The favelas.
Yeah,
I like to donate music and books to people in Brazil. Although they don't speak English, a lot of them, they can listen to the music and look at the images. Yeah, I travel a lot. I like to travel. I get inspiration from all over the world, you know, China and, you know, the Asian people, the Latin people, especially the Latin people, they're very creative. So, you know, I feed off of it, I guess, because it sometimes makes me write the music and the poetry. Do a lot of lyrics?
Do you do a lot of music and lyrical stuff? I saw on your website you had a picture of Paul McCartney. Do you write a lot of music for people as well, or at least the lyrics?
I'm actually just starting to take, you know, I guess I did it backwards. Most music people sing and then write. I actually wrote first, and now I'm transferring it into music slowly. Like, first book that I transferred into spoken word is Mind Juice.
Right.
With Bruno Linares, who is, I actually met through Glory and Emilio Estefan. And from that, we are creating dance music. And Bruno also wrote a couple songs for me from a couple poems. One was Shelter is Heaven, and another was In the Night, which is in Time Warp. And Shelter is Heaven is Joya. Bruno has already recorded it, and it's beautiful. And then In the Night, I'm going to record with Seavox. So I'm taking the poetry, because some of it is strictly poetry, but most of it is more lyrical.
Right.
And it can be brought right into a song. I think probably 85% of what I write is more for, you know, music. So I think I didn't know in the beginning I was writing music, you know, writing lyrics for songs.
Right.
But I actually am.
Well, you know, I'm going to read the end of the night, if you don't mind. And again, anybody that wants to join us, you can call in if you have questions for Jimmy or want to comment on the show at 888-228-4494. Or toll-free worldwide at 877-489-6350. Into the night, this stranger came out of nowhere, made the blue in my eyes, touched the stars in the night, a moment in time, kissed by Spanish eyes. You made my soul bleed, alive, just like the colors in the forest. You brought me to my knees. Couldn't stop, never will, you made my dreams come true. You know, you kind of write, I mean, one of the things they always say, it's easy to write a 10-page paper. It's hard to write, like, a haiku or something that only uses a few words. You really just use very basic words. You just pull them out, put them on paper, and then allow the reader, well, the imagery is also beautiful. The pictures are absolutely gorgeous in these books. But, you know, I think you really do, you're very much a minimalist in terms of the way that you write. Did you always write that way?
Always. Well, yes, I did, actually. I think some of my older stuff is a little deeper, but I think all the words are very simple. I don't think I know any hard words, so I couldn't write them. Can I read you one of my favorites?
Absolutely.
Okay, this is one of the first pieces I wrote, and this is when I knew I was a little different. This is from the old, this is in my first book. It's called Strawberries Heal Wounds. And all my thoughts, emotions get caught in all of my day. Apples and cherries grow happily always. May love into your soul, may guidance take its toll. As I walk, sounds of laughter spark the air. An elephant giggles, tiptoes and stares at all the children of the world. Cries pour out of clouds for harmony to sweep this earth's land. More cries cover the sand. Music is finally at last bringing unity to this great land. Come together, strawberries heal wounds, and the moon drips the music that brings peace to the world.
I like the elephant.
The elephant giggling.
The elephant giggling.
Yeah, I don't... Yeah, when I read that one, I knew I better protect some of my writings, because that one kind of blew me away. And I write them so fast that I don't see them what they are at first until I reread them a little while later, and then I say, wow, that's, you know, I think that way. pretty neat. And I think that's exactly what I felt and I wrote. It didn't change any of the words. That's exactly how it came out, like the words in my mind. And I wrote them with a pencil, and I don't ever change what I write. Like what I feel and it comes out on paper, that's exactly what it is, the way it starts and the way it ends. Nothing is, you know, I don't think I could change it. It wouldn't be right if I changed it later, because it wouldn't be that dream for that moment.
So this is,
I think that's what they are. They're
in your time.
It's a moment of my time, and it's like a daydream. I catch it quickly. I can feel it coming, and I take advantage of it. I've missed a lot of them, missed a lot of them in the beginning, because I didn't know the way I think I should be writing it, you know, when it's coming out, and I can never get it back. But I've written so many more that I'm happy that I'm able to do it.
How do you know when you're about to enter into, or you just have a sense that you need to pick up a pencil?
Yeah, I carry, how do I know? To begin with, I'm always, you know, when I drive, I always have white paper and pencils. And, or when I travel, but I don't know, I just feel it coming. Like I'm driving and I'll be looking, you know, maybe the music is telling me words or people are talking to me and I feel like they're right. And all of a sudden it comes out and then I start writing it. You know, it's very strange. I feel it coming. Sometimes maybe 5 poems a day, other times, not every day. Maybe like I won't write for 3 months, and then all of a sudden, it just starts, and there's like 15 of them that come out, and then another 12, and then a book is created. Like I'm working on Electric Blue right now, my new book. It's almost, well, I started it 6 months ago, and I haven't, half of it's finished. I haven't written the other half, but all of a sudden it'll start pouring out. You know, maybe it takes me a while because I go through so much, and then when it all, like months later or whenever, it just feels like I've gone through enough in my mind, it starts to make maybe the next steps in my life, and it's coming out in the poetry or the lyrics. Like I, you know, when I wrote In the Night, I'd met somebody, and when I left, the person was, you know, incredible. When I left the person and when I was driving home, I wrote In the Night. But I knew when I was with the person that it was going to happen, and I just couldn't wait to leave and write it. Does that make sense? There was
something there and I felt it,
but I couldn't write it there because I don't, you know, but as I was driving home, something, it just came out, and that was what came out, because it's true, you know, it was like a stranger, but it was exactly what happened, you know, but my depiction of it.
Well, I think we talk to the kids all the time about trying to figure out something that, you know, I don't know, when you're around enough kids for a long enough period of time, you tend to think that the statement that we all have a unique gift to share is a bit overly optimistic in terms of that, because sometimes you just think, maybe, you know, there's something to hear, but I don't know exactly what it is. But we try and talk to the kids constantly about finding that voice, finding something that they can latch on to. You know, how did you turn it into a business?
Well, people pushed me to, because I was all excited about my first book, Pieces of Jimmy. I thought anybody would publish it,
right.
But it was the opposite. Nobody would, because it was poetry. But I was like, well, look, it's not normal poetry. It's different. it's like music and lyrics, and they're like, you know, well, they were nice to me, but nobody would help me. So I said, okay, let me call the Recording Academy, and they took the first book in the Grammy gift bag. That's when I said, okay, I'll just start my own company, and I went and did 5 more books, and I had 6 then. And that was how I formed Jimmyland Corporation, which is the publishing company that, you know, houses my 17 books. I might have maybe, yeah, 17 books.
Where
and then I formed Amazon, Atlas Books, Barnes & Noble, barnesandnoble.com. You know, you can order them anywhere in the world. I mean, I mean, I have great distributors. You know, one of the people that print my books also is one of the distributors. Then I have Gazelle in the UK. South Africa, you can order them. Walmart, I'm pretty sure Walmart. I don't think in the stores, Walmart.com. A lot of the .coms, some of the stores carry them, but mostly online.
You mentioned South Africa. You had I'd read somewhere that you were quite interested in doing some work over there. Can you speak to that? I hadn't heard you talk about that.
I donated some books to a great cause, Books for Africa.
Right.
And I was really excited. I donated a lot of poetry books. And what they do is they spread them out to different schools in the small, you know, in the small towns. And, you know, where they're trying to transform towns and have schools. And I'll be donating a couple times a year to that cause. It's called Books for Africa.
Right.
It's a really nice cause. Most of my big donations are in Brazil to the Brazilians.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a couple huge favelas. Are you familiar with what a favela is?
No.
Well, favela is like in Brazil where the really poor people live. But, you know, like there's Hacienda Favela, which is in Rio de Janeiro.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's 500,000 people that live in the favela.
Would that be like a ghetto for us?
Yeah, it would be a ghetto, but it's different in Brazil because, it's different because people are happy in the favelas, and it's so exciting. It's like it's all, you know, there's artists, there's music, there's radio stations. It's like where they live, and that's why I'm so inspired, and I give so many books to the people and to the schools there.
How do you spell that, favela? Do you know?
Favela. And
I think look that up. That sounds like a beautiful place to be.
Oh, it's amazing. This favela that I go through, the first time I went through it, I was blown away. As you drive through it and up the mountain and down the winding curbs in the back to the, you know, to go leave the favela, on both sides of the street are little stores. And there must be 1,000 stores going up and winding around the mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And then spread out is the little teeny houses. And there's radio stations and there's graffiti and the buses go through there. And they have these motorcycles. They're called moto taxis. And they take the people up and down the mountain for one real. That's amazing. And it's called Hacienda is one of them, and there's another one next to it, next to Ipanema, which is in Rio de Janeiro, and it's called Vigigal. It's another favela that's the same kind of, it's just a little smaller. But Brazil has many favelas. And people come out, you know, and they work. It's just where people live, and you know, like they live in New York and, you know, in certain areas that are poor.
Yeah.
But it doesn't seem like the people are poor to me in spirit because they're happy, it's amazing. It's not about money. or, you know, about the things, the material things that we feel are in America that are so valuable, but they're not worth anything. I mean, it's just for one moment of feeling.
I was watching the Ryder Cup last week, for any of you guys out there that are golf fans, but the European equivalent to what we call our money list is called the merit. It's the the honor of merit or the merit? It's something about merit and honor. The list is called something different, and it's funny because we call it the money list, and it's almost as if in America we've decided that that is the be-all end-all of creativity or the be-all end-all of experience or anything else. And when you talk about these favelas, you know, there's so much of the rest of the world that really lives. And I think so much of America and a lot of the reasons that we're dealing with the challenges that we're facing now are chasing after that material dream. I mean, I think that's what this bailout is all about, is about people who need a little bit of extra money to buy more shit so that they can go out and...
You just hit it on the nail. And that's what you want to... Going back to the children in the schools, that's what you want to teach them. It isn't about getting everything you can get, and it isn't about the material things. It's about finding, as you said, that niche, something that you like to do that makes you happy. And if you can make money at it, it's wonderful. If you can't, then you just still do it because you love to do it.
Right.
That's why I write. I mean, it wasn't to get rich. I didn't do this to, you know, I just started writing and I was just furious nobody would publish them. So I started the company myself. I mean, everybody that tells me no, it just gives me a little more incentive because I know that I can do it.
Right.
So I guess the no's for me are what give me the drive more than any. I mean, it's drive because there is no no in life. You can do anything you want. If you can dream it, you can do it.
Is that a legitimate thing to tell a young person, do you think? I mean, if you're talking to a 5'1", you know, kid in elementary school who's, you know, in ninth grade and he's, you know, 5'1" and he can't dribble for anything and he wants to be in the NBA, is it true that we can do whatever we want, or is it more true that we can do whatever it is that we can do? You know, it's more of
our
vision.
Well, you know, I can't be a basketball player, but I never wanted to be,
right,
or a baseball player. I mean, I'm doing what I like. I mean, you can be, like, if you really, you don't have to be brilliant. You can go to school, you can finish college, you can even go to law school. You don't have to have straight A's, or you can, yes, I think you can do anything you want.
Struggle with that in my head because I think at some point we do the kids a disservice in terms of telling them you can do anything you want without thinking about the fact that, hey, you're really good at math, or you know what, you seem to be really, really talented at public speaking. Or I was talking to a friend of mine the other day. Him and I have a business together, and one of the things he said to me, because I have a problem, one of the problems that I have is that I can be successful doing what I do in a very short period of time, because I make presentations, I go out and I'm a public speaker. And it's a talent that I have, but at some level I feel guilty about the talent. And he just tried to remind me that, you know, you have a talent that other people don't have, and it's really important to find that talent and focus on it. And I don't know, as an educator, that's a quandary for me, is finding that.
Well,
that
wait a minute,
medium.
But yeah, but you know what? You're right and I'm right in ways.
Right.
You have to look, when I was young, I might have dreamt of being a tennis player. But as I get older, I mean, there's many, many dreams in your mind. And you have to keep trying different things until you find what you're really... I've done many things, but I think I found what I'm good at.
The thing.
In life. what I think I'm good at, I mean, I think I'm good at not only the writing and I'm starting the music, but I also have another company where I sell rare art. I have a great eye. I mean, I'm doing what I like. And, you know, I basically just started it 5 years ago. And it's all taking off.
But you're also doing what you're talented at. I mean, the ability to,
right,
to,
right,
to find your talent and like what you're... See, a lot of us look at other people and we go, I wish I could do, you know, I wish I could be Jimmy Robinson. I wish I could write. I wish I could travel the world. I wish I could donate to wonderful causes. But the truth is, I'm an accountant or I'm really, really good at, you know, doing something,
yeah,
with numbers or whatever.
Sometimes when you're going after a dream, like maybe you want to be a basketball player, but you're short, like you said, and you're playing basketball, maybe that dream's taking you, going to take you to another dream. Maybe you're going to invent something. Maybe you're going to invent a new basketball.
Right.
But the one dream is the other. Look, there was a doctor. Was it a lawyer? No, a corporate guy from New York that retired, and he had cancer. I don't remember his name, but he had cancer. And he had cancer a few times, and it was driving him crazy. He couldn't. They got rid of it, and they came back. So he started playing around with these with lights, and he's not a scientist, and he's now found a cure for cancer. With burning it out with these lights, because there's certain rays in light that burns. It's amazing. But anyways, one led to another.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's how it is. I mean, you have to keep going in different directions. You know, one dream, maybe the other, maybe the other, maybe the other. You got to teach kids early to do everything that they love.
I think it's a really good way of looking at it, but how do you, you know, the other thing too is you strike me as somebody who's incredibly resilient, because a lot of people do not deal with failure very well. I mean, going from one dream to the next dream to the next dream where they haven't had some sort of whatever you would consider a success. Where did you, I mean, is this your mother or your grandmother speaking through you? Where did you get
gotta be my grandmother speaking through me. No, you know what? It's gotta be both. My mother and grandmother raised me.
Right.
And it's got to be both of them, because my grandmother, it was always, you know, like, it's funny, when I was young and I wrote a poem, and she's like, it's beautiful. Then another time I wrote another one, she's like, no, wait a minute. When I was going through my hard times, okay, when I was homeless and when I was in jail, I would send my grandmother the poetry to hold for me, and she would read it, and she would be like, Jim, it's too difficult. Write simple words, you know? So that's one of them telling me. My mother, on the other hand, was always like, never, she always just said, do what you want. Do it. Never told me I couldn't do it. I must be doing it through them.
Right. I think that's part of the key. We talk about resiliency in young people, and depending on where they come from, it doesn't really matter. What matters is one caring adult. Apparently, one caring adult seems to be the key to success in any young kid's life, where somebody holds their reality as being real.
Yeah, I mean, you can have just a mom or just a father. You don't have to have both, you know, but you have to give your parent, you know, whoever's raising you, respect, you know, and not follow your friend's advice all the time. Follow your parents. They're smarter, because they've probably been through it already.
Yeah, but that wasn't easy to hear when you were a kid.
No, I know. It's none of us listened, did we?
No, I don't think so. I mean, that's the thing. Is like,
you're trying to give them
the skills to bounce back when they get old enough to realize that a lot of what you said was actually true. How do they get through those moments, you know?
Yeah,
I'm sitting here watching a documentary. I'm watching a documentary on the Favela de Rio de Janeiro.
Oh, you're watching it?
I got one on YouTube that just popped up, and they're showing some different pictures of what you were talking about.
Is it a beautiful place? Do you see the capture of the front and the two mountains with all the homes?
This one actually, this guy's hooded. I don't know what he's talking about, but I think he's talking about, is there some terrorists? We can't let them up here. Is there soldiers down there? Do they have something going on in terms of a fight between
night,
the military?
Well, yeah, sometimes at night it's the wild, wild west because of the drugs.
Right.
But in the daytime it's normal. Well, it's anywhere. I mean, that could be in Miami, Los Angeles. Look, it's violent everywhere. Look, if drugs, guns, it's negative. And if it's there, you know, things are going to happen. But daytime, those places are incredible. It's like any, I'm sure at night, I've never been in there at night. I'm sure it is too, but there's times when it isn't safe. But
right.
Isn't it like that anywhere in the world? Right. You know, there's good times. Yeah, Hopkins is amazing. I would tell anybody if they travel to Rio to take a tour through the favelas, because it will, when they look at the people, their faces, and they see the happiness in them. They're not sad people. You know, you think when you hear favelas, people are poor and people are starving. They're not starving. They're poor, but they're not poor. They just don't have a lot of money, you know, and it's wonderful. I mean, money isn't the thing that we need. That we need money to survive, but it's not what makes us happy.
Yeah,
and,
well, survival is a very interesting word, you know. I mean, in terms of what you're watching, I'm watching these people cooking their food and sharing with neighbors and doing the best they can with what they have, and it's whether
what
that
they have.
Some of the times I go, like, I live in a small college town, and I'll see kids, I'll go to like a local Safeway or something when there's a store across town where you can get the exact same product for 50% cheaper. And, you know, a lot of kids will just go out there and spend money because they can. You know, I don't think it has anything to do with anything other, although I think that's going to change. I really do. I think the next period of time in the American Revolution is going to change.
Well, some kids don't know the value of a dollar. They buy $100 Nikes. You know,
their
parents, somebody has to pay for them, but it's, you know, sometimes it's better. You know, I hear Oprah, I hear Warren Buffett. They think their kids, I mean, Warren Buffett thinks he's made his kids work for the money. He hasn't given them much of the $52 billion that he has. They work for it. I mean, one of the granddaughters works for a family, or she doesn't get any money. I mean, that's good. Everybody should learn the value of a dollar. And the only way to do it is to work for it. I know it's difficult when you're 8 years old or 10, but when you get a little older, you know, and you're old enough to get a job, you should work. Because when you work, usually if you work and you're in school or you're doing something to better your life, there's less chances of getting into trouble. And that's the idea. Because, you know, it's jail and prison, and it just wastes your time and your life, you know. And you can get, you don't want to waste your life on that. It's because it's negative.
Well, like you said, too, it's also finding the next dream. I think one of the things that education doesn't do a good job of a lot of times is give kids experience, because oftentimes,
right,
those experiences they need to get to that next dream.
You're right. Definitely.
I know those experiences, even though that 11 years, and again, we were talking about forgiveness today, but one of the things that I talk a lot about with my guys is that in order for them to move forward, they have to integrate their past. They can't think about their past in some way, shape, or form as being a negative thing. They have to integrate it. Forgive themselves, you know, forgive the fact that it happened or whatever, but also you have to integrate it. You have to accept, hey, you know what, that was me. I was homeless. I was in prison. I was a drug addict.
Definitely, you can never forget what you've been through. You just move on in life. And, you know it's in you what you've been through, but, you know, I tell everybody, never look back. Always look ahead.
Right.
And, you know, if you've learned the hard way, like I have, and I learned the really, really hard way, because I wasted a lot of my earlier years, but now it's inside me, and I'm so glad. If I look back, I guess what I went through, it brought me to here.
Right.
So I guess I can thank God that I went through it. I mean, it couldn't have, if it wouldn't have been what I'd been through, I wouldn't have written my first five books.
It couldn't have happened any other way.
It could have not, exactly. It could have not happened any other way. And I'm glad I went through it. I know it's all part of me, but I always try to look ahead. And I never, like, I'm never angry if somebody doesn't like me or if I get rejected. I just figure out how to do it. Because it's, you know, I've already been through so much that all the things now, I just try to turn into positive to make the day great. There's not enough hours in a day to where you can enjoy your whole day. I mean, there's so much to do, so much to learn, but you have to do it. I mean, nobody's going to, you know, hopefully nobody hands it to you. It's better to do it on your own.
Right.
If somebody hands it to you, it's not worth anything, honestly. It's so much better. Like, everything I own, I bought. You know, my mother never had any money. My grandmother had only a little bit. I'm glad that I've worked for everything I have because it showed me what everything's worth. You know, I never, you know, when I was doing all the wrong things, I really never knew the value of anything because I didn't work for it, you know? I mean, when you're doing drugs and you're committing crime and you're, you know, and you're not... That's the worst because you're only bringing yourself down. You're bringing your family, and you know you wake up one day and it's 20 years later. That's how quick life is.
Yeah.
You know, and some never wake up. I mean, most people don't make it through the storms. You know, they catch a disease or they. Nowadays, I mean, they get shot or, you know, there's a lot of bad things when you're involved with bad that can just end your life that quickly. You know, it's a little bit different than in the 80s, you know, today, I think. But if you just keep instilling in the kids' minds the good, I think more will win than more will lose.
Well, that's what the
honestly.
Research shows. The resiliency levels of the research shows this, exactly what you're talking about is that, you know, what bears out is about 65 to 70% of kids with one caring adult generally are going to
yes.
make it through even the worst situations. And I think we don't focus on that. The media doesn't focus on that. I think the media focuses on the negative, and we tend to use consumerism as a way of trying to heal the pain that we suffer from that
right.
experience. You know, we see the world as being negative, so let me go to the mall and buy something. But,
right.
you know, I think you're right. I think more than not, most people, we try and tell that to parents, too. You know, I was talking to a guy the other day, his kid's like 16, and he was saying, you know, my kid's started smoking
right.
pot, and he's this, and he's that, and he's, you know, I'm really worried about him, what do you think I should do? And I said, well, you know, I mean, honestly, you know, continue to stand by your principles, continue to do whatever you can, but most of the kids are going to get through that adolescent phase of experimentation, and I think our drug policies in this country are completely ridiculous in that regard because they don't allow for experimentation and the normal stuff that kids happen to get through and allow them to bounce back on their own.
Right, right. Well,
it's a challenging time. But I appreciate your work, and I, as I said, I've used it, and I will continue to use it in my work, and I really can't thank
you
enough for joining us here tonight. It really was fun. How can people find out more about you if they want to?
Well, they can go to my website, jimmydrobinson.com.
All right.
My books sell everywhere. If you know, especially through Atlas Books, if you know, there's a website, www.atlasbooks.com/JimmyLand. My new music is going to be on Masterbeat, and it's in Best Buy. I know that I've submitted Mind Juice, and Mind Juice is a spoken word CD, so it's submitted for Grammy nomination. I don't know if it'll get it, but it's in the running.
Right on.
And so is A Tiny Shoe. Tiny Shoe's will be at Best Buy for sale. the books you can buy basically anywhere online, Amazon, or they're going to be at Barnes & Noble, some of them. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, fantastic.
I like it. I want to leave something for everybody, and this is something that I really feel that on the earth there's more positive than negative, and I say that I haven't partied for many years, no liquor, nothing. When I look at the whole spectrum now, I know deep down that there always is more good than bad. And you just have to be careful. And when you're in the bad, you have to come out of it and go to the good. Because most people on the earth are good. And they'll help you with your dream. Whatever it may be.
Well, that's a perfect way to end the show. I can't thank you enough for joining me, man. I really do. And good luck in your travels and all the work that you're doing.
Hey, thank you so much. And then if you need books just for your students, let me know.
All right. Have a great night.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Bye. All right, everybody out there. That was an enjoyable conversation, to say the least. I think, obviously, when we talk about here on the show, has a lot to do with the idea of trying to figure out some way to get through, to find your voice. And maybe your voice isn't completely clean. Maybe your voice includes a few beers every now and then, or a little bit of relaxation juice as opposed to the straight up narrow. But, you know, it doesn't mean that we can't find our way. It doesn't mean that we can't find something, just something inside of us that's worth saying, you know, for however long that we're here. You know, my mom was only here for 65 years, but in my mind, those 65 years were spoken loudly and clearly as to what she stood for and what she held to be valuable. And it's not really about what it is. It's about you finding something that you can speak to. And I'm not using the word speak in terms of the spoken word. I mean, that's my particular resource. But what I'm talking about is some way that you can offer, share, give something back to the people that you come in contact with. What is it that you have to offer? What is it that you can bring to the table? Maybe it's you're an excellent mechanic. Maybe it's the fact that you're a brilliant writer like Jimmy. Maybe it's the fact that you're a singer. Maybe it's the fact that you, I don't know, build fences. Whatever it happens to be. The key is not to find something that makes other people say, oh my God, aren't you, isn't it great to be you? What the key is to find something that other people need, to find something that other people want, to be a part of the process, to be a part of going out there and celebrating the idea of being exactly who you are. Because we know DNA, fingerprints, everything else. Sonia Bennett, or Sonia Barnett, I believe, is going to join us next week. She talks a lot about the individuality of, in her books, about the individuality of each person and how we have a harmonic to our environment, a harmonic to our nature, or even our DNA chain. If you were to break it down and play it to music, you would think that there would be some harmonic to each one of us. And our goal here is to help you to find that harmonic. If you can find it, if you can find your harmony, if all of us or more of us could find our harmony, I believe that the collective consciousness would start to shift. We'd start to see the reality of the material world as being base. We'd start to see the reality of consciousness as evolving. We'd start to see the fact that there's more out there. People write about it. Sonia may talk to us about it next week, about that it already exists, it's already out there. I don't tend to agree 100% on that case, and I hope that we'll have a spirited dialogue on that issue next week. I tend to think that we're in the evolutionary process. This is part of the beginning. It's not like something that's already there and we lost it. Sonia talks about falling from the seven-story mountain or the seven-story pyramid down to the base level. Why did we fall in the first place? Why did we leave the top of the mountain to come back here, unless it was to find it again? But I hope you'll join me again. I can't thank you enough for being with me tonight. And again, if you like the show, If there's something interesting about it, please email it to a friend. We'd love to have more of you with us, and we'd also like to have your phone calls anytime you want to join us. I'm going to say goodnight from the Conscious Communicator, and remember, the rest is still unwritten. Have a fantastic week. Thanks for joining me. Thank you, Don.
Hi, my name is Rusty May, and I'm the host of The Conscious Communicator, a show dedicated to helping people find their true voice, the nonviolent voice of personal responsibility and purpose, the voice that only they can speak. The reason that most of us fail to achieve our true voice is because of the false voices that occupy the mind, the voices of ego, consumption, expectation, opinion, and self-doubt rob us of our true nature, our true voice. Join me each week for a chat about inner purpose, outer passion, and finding your true voice. I'll see you on Sunday.
Hi, I'm singer-songwriter Fremont John, and you're listening to BBSRadio.com.
Hi, my name's Rusty May, and I'm the host of The Conscious Communicator, a show dedicated to helping people find their true voice, the nonviolent voice of personal responsibility and purpose, the voice that only they can speak. The reason that most of us fail to achieve our true voice is because of the false voices that occupy the mind, the voices of ego, consumption, expectation, opinion, and self-doubt rob us of our true nature, our true voice. Join me each week for a chat about inner purpose, outer passion, and finding your true voice. I'll see you on Sunday. We've come to the end of another hour here at The Conscious Communicator, and I can't thank you enough for joining me on this journey. Your phone calls and emails are greatly appreciated, and if you like what we're doing, please invite a friend to join us. This is a conversation that needs many voices, and as we open up the possibility of conscious communication to more and more people, the results will be a freeing of the true self from the burdensome armor of ego, and a flowering of the potential that is available to all of us. Until next time, peace out, travelers. The rest is still unwritten.